This is a Women's Overseas Service League project, oral history project, of Mary E. Price. And it was taken by Mary Bruner at the September 1st meeting of the Orange County Unit of Women's Overseas Service League in Laguna Hills, California.
In 1933, I went to Georgetown University Hospital. It was during the Depression. We had no money. Nobody else had any money, so it didn't matter. But we walked everywhere. Georgetown was only 5 miles from downtown. We could walk it easily because we were good walkers. Except there was one girl from Alabama who went to see if we were. And she was very homesick. So we told her before the Sunday we'd take her on a little walk. We walked her down to the Capitol. We took her to the Lincoln Memorial. We gave her a splendid tour, and she forgot her homesickness, but she never forgot her sore feet.
And she warned against going walking with us. She said, don't go in those rooms. Avoid them. But anyway, we got her over there. But now I want to tell you why it was important at Georgetown. Our instructor there in nursing had been a World War I nurse in the Red Cross. She loved the Red Cross, and she went to Paris, and she came home by way of Siberia. So we thought, oh, that's wonderful. It's too bad we couldn't have lived in World War I, because that was the war end, all wars. Little did we know. So anyway, she saw that we all joined the Red Cross. So when we graduated, everybody joined the Red Cross that didn't get married. Because about half the class got married. There was about 35 in our class and 24 graduated. But three went in the Army. I was the only one that went in the Navy. I thought, I always like the sea. I think I better choose the Navy. So in 1938, I got my papers that belonged to the reserve, filled them out, forgot about them. Poland was invaded the 1st of September of 1939. I got all these papers to go in the reserves. And I thought, oh, what are these? You know, so I said, well, I'll fill them out. Won't be any war. So I filled them out, and pretty soon I was in the Naval Reserve. But they didn't need nurses at the time. But then I went down on the bulletin board one day, and they had a sign, and they needed 50 nurses in Panama. They were building the third set of locks, and it was through the canal zone, a separate division, and there was a department in Washington, D.C. And he went to see this man, his name was Mr. Erdman on K Street. So I was on night duty, and I went down for my interview, and we had to send in a picture with our papers. And the first thing he told me was, my, you look like a picture. Well, I didn't know if that was good or bad. I said, I don't know if I'm in or out, you know. But anyway, I got in, and I got my appointment to go to Panama. Well, I had been at Georgetown for 7 years with my student days and working as a graduate student, so I was ready to go to see the world. And Panama sounded very interesting. Well, we didn't get a whole lot of money, but we got a lot of good fringe benefits. Our apartments were only $15 a month. Our food was $30 a month. And we had 7 dietitians that had excellent food. And the hospital was one of the best in the world there at Garden Hospital on the Pacific side. It was a pleasure to work there. But when you got there, you had to go down on a ship. They had 3 ships that belonged to the Panama Canal Railroad. The Ancon, the Panama, and the Cristobal. Well, I went down on the Ancon, and they paid your way down. Your pay started the minute you set foot on that ship. And it was a 7-day trip, and you stopped in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And Port-au-Prince was a lovely place then. The natives would come out, swim out, and dive for coins. And they had names for people. They'd want you to throw coins in. And they'd say, Miss Big Hat, Mr. Seagor, Mr. Striped Shirt, and all these names. So, but they don't let them do that anymore. But it was fun. And the harbor was beautiful there. And we stayed from 7 in the morning until about 4 in the afternoon in Haiti. And we got a chance to go up in the hills of Patienville and hear the voodoo drums. And oh, it was all exciting. And then we got some rum there. But you had to drink the rum before you got to Panama because you couldn't take it in. So you didn't see a single soul. And you got to Panama the next day. You didn't see a single soul up on deck that night. They were all somewhere having drinking their rum before they got to Panama, you know. So, and then when we got there to Panama, there were 7 of us on the ship, and 6 of us went to the Pacific side. 1 nurse went to the Atlantic side. So, but she didn't mind. She didn't know. The rest of us all were from Washington, D.C. area. But she wasn't. She was from somewhere else, and she didn't mind. So anyway, a representative of the governor met us when the ship docked there on the Atlantic side. And then you have a boat train that takes you from the Atlantic side to the Pacific side, and it only takes 1 hour and 20 minutes. So nobody ever in their right mind went through the canal on a ship because it took all day. And I worked in Panama for 3.5 years, and I never had gone through the canal until I went to the Navy. And then I went the first time I went through the canal to the Navy. So you get there sooner or later. But anyway, when we got to Gorgas, the chief nurse met us. And she had a sign, a pledge, that we wouldn't go on duty drunk. I thought, oh my goodness, what have I gotten to? I'm with a bunch of Sari Gamp. Well, Sari Gamp was a nurse that Charles Dickens had written about, and she was a terrible person. She was a prostitute, about the worst person in all of society. So I said, oh, I'm here with a bunch of Sari Gamp. But I never saw anybody go on duty drunk, so I think that was just propaganda. But they were good to us, and we were the first nurses that they had. They had a lot of older nurses, but no young nurses. So we were well received, and we learned a lot down there because they had good doctors. And it was a funny thing because it was part Army and part civilian, but it was all part of the United States, you know. But everybody respected each other. They got along well, and it was a pleasure to work there in the canal zone then. Now it's changed. But then it was really nice, as Adele knows. So we all got there, we got our places, we got our quarters. Well, they didn't have our quarters ready yet, so they put us out on the porches of the big quarters. And every day at 5 o'clock, the birds would wake you up. Oh, they had the noisiest birds, but they were friendly. So we enjoyed them. So pretty soon our quarters were built, so everybody had their own place. But I stayed there, and then Pearl Harbor, this was in March of 40, and Pearl Harbor was the 7th of December of 41. So I was on duty that night, and we didn't hear until about 5 o'clock in the evening, because it was the time difference, we didn't know. And I was working on a colored OB ward, and we went right into darkness. Well, you can imagine trying to get the little dark babies to the little dark mothers in the dark. It was not easy. So I said, little mothers, you are keeping your little babies. So I let them have their babies that night. I thought they're safer with the mothers than going back and forth in the dark. But then after that, we went from about a 500-bed hospital to about a 1,500-bed hospital overnight. Because with the war, we were the only military hospital. Well, it was a civilian hospital, but we take care of the military. We had Navy, Army, Marines, Coast Guard, people that came on the ships, everything with the Gorgas. So I wasn't called from down there. I was in the Naval Reserve, but I wasn't called from there because it was considered a war zone. They sent all the dependents out immediately, and the word was that they were supposed to hit the Panama Canal at the same time that they hit Pearl Harbor. But they didn't realize the extent of what all they had done, so they had given that up. But they could have hit us just as easily as they did Pearl Harbor, because we were really not expecting it. But anyway, it went right into wartime footing, and we got prepared. And as soon as my relief came down, then I asked me if I wanted to stay down there or if I wanted to go home to go in the Navy, you know, on active duty. Well, I said, I've been down there for 3.5 years, and I would really like to go home if it was convenient. So I got sent back to Washington, D.C., to Bethesda. And I thought I was the only person in the world that joined the Navy to get sent home. But I had joined, and I went on active duty in January of 1944. There were 110 in our indoctrination class. I went to Portsmouth. I didn't have any warm clothes because I'd been in Panama, and they told us not to bring any warm clothes. They said, you're going right in the uniform. You don't need them. So I thought, well, all right. So I borrowed a coat, and it was half of the line. It didn't come together, and I was freezing. So we had double-deck bunks, and this one girl that was living below me, she asked me, she said, well, what have you got on? I said, everything I own. I had my pajamas, everything. I was really, because I was freezing. But then as soon as I got my good warm uniform, it was all right. So I had gotten my hair cut real short because I knew that the Navy didn't want your hair long. They didn't want it on your collar. So I was going to be the best Navy nurse they had, or one try. So I had to cut real short. So when I got my cap on, it looked like I didn't have any hair. It was ridiculous. So of course the whole 109 of them laughed at me. Don't worry, it'll grow. But then when the chief nurse was giving the speech to us, when we were all going to our duty station, she was telling us how now we were Navy nurses, we were supposed to wear our uniform in a proper fashion. And she told us all these things, and I thought, yes, I'll do that. And she says, and that's the way I want the hat worn. And I'm looking around to see who this person is, and it's me. I had the last laugh. She liked the way I was wearing my hat. So they would be there, all these nurses, they said, oh, you're so lucky to be going to Bethesda. They said they have private rooms, and oh, they said it's just like a big luxurious hotel. Well, when we get to Bethesda, they have got our clutter tree in. They put us in the basement, 10 beds in the basement. We had a tunnel, and we went to the hospital. We had to go through the tunnel to the hospital from the quarters. I said, we'll never know when it's spring, because we're sleeping in the basement and we're going through the tunnel to work. But anyway, they found us nice quarters, and we did. We could walk outdoors when it was nice weather. So I stayed there for 18 months. Then I got orders to a hospital ship. And that was very, very interesting. My roommate and I, that was going to be my roommate on the ship, we had a reservation in New York at the Commodore Hotel, and the ship was at the Todd Shipyard. And it was pretty hard to get a hotel reservation in wartime, you know. But everybody wanted to stay with us, so I said, don't worry, we'll have a cot in our room. So I was going to have 13 cots in the room. And I don't know how it's going to be managed, but I wasn't going to worry about that. So when we got to New York, the chief nurse had a reservation for us in Brooklyn, which is where the Todd Shipyard was and where our ship was. So I got saved. I didn't have to have 13 cots put in the room. So I stayed on the ship for, we were commissioned on May 12th, right after VE Day. And we were going out to Japan getting ready for the invasion of Japan. So when our ship was ready, we sailed from New York and we went through the Panama Canal. And that's when my first trip through, and I couldn't tell my friends down there that worked there that I was coming, so I told them I'd see them soon, so they knew I was coming, you know. So they met us on one of the locks, and the captain let them come on the ship. We were at Peter McGill. He let them come on the ship and go on down to Balboa with us. And somebody said, we never heard of it in peacetime, much less in wartime, you know. I said, I guess these nurses were a threat. You know, they'd be all right. So they came and they went with us. And then I have a picture of us all at one of the nightclubs there. They had these outdoor gardens showing the doctors, nurses. We all got together and had a good time as we were going through. So when I got to Honolulu, another one of my friends was there that I had known in the canal zone. So she worked at Queen's Hospital. And she lived in a lovely place, and she had a lovely bathroom with a bathtub. So we didn't have any bathtub on the ship, so I liked going to call on her. So she asked me one time, she said, you come to see me or my bathtub? I said, well, both. I said, I really do. I said, I love you and I love your bathtub. But she lives right here in this world, and I'm trying to get her to come. She did. You'd like her. And her husband's here, but he hasn't been too well. So I think maybe if he gets a little better, she can come. But it's funny how you keep running into people no matter if you knew them all over the world. You'll keep running into them again. Well, this will take us up to then when the war, when we got to Japan, the war was just getting ready to be over. It was about the 29th of August, and we went in before it was officially over to take care of our prisoners of war because they were let out of the prison camp. And that first night of August the 29th of 1945, they let 1,500 of them out, and we were out there in Tokyo Bay, and we couldn't go in because the harbor had been bombed and there was no pier. So we had to wait out in the open sea for the ships, or the little boats to come out. And they were so happy to see us, those prisoners. A lot of them swam out to the ship, you know. And we processed about 1,500 prisoners that night. And the ones that were well enough were sent on to Honolulu, with Jonathan Wainwright and, you know, all of those people that had been taken up to Tan, and it was really very exciting. And then we had these three ships there. We had a Navy ship, an Army ship, and a Dutch ship. So when the things quieted down, we started separating people. We got the Army together and the Air Force, and we got the Navy and the Marines together, and then the Dutch and the Australians and the Canadians. We got them separated to where they could get the, you know, proper care and everything. And I had this one man on the, in my ward, and he had a very bad leg, and he was going to be sent over to the Dutch ship. I said, Doc, we were, by this time, we were all out at a pier right next to each other. I said, Doctor, do you think he can go on a gurney or a ship, or can he walk over? Oh, he said, he has to go on a gurney. So a half hour later, I looked around, the man's dead. I said, what happened? And he said, over there on that gurney? Oh, he said, that ship's not air conditioned. And he said, he didn't like that ship. He came back to ours. He was going to stay on that ship. And then they issued clothes to all these prisoners of war. And this one Army man had gotten hit. They set supplies down on drums and parachutes. And he got hit by one of these drums, you know. And he had a fractured skull. And his name was a Coco. And he loved his Navy. Oh, they issued him Navy clothing. And he'd lie in his bunk with his cap on. I said, Coco, we do not wear our captain's badge. So I said, in the Navy, we do not wear our captain's badge, you know. But he liked it. So he thought, well, so what? Let him wear his cap. So nobody got him. But he looked so pitiful that he got about three breakfasts and two lunches. And this doctor asked this one man, he said, how much did you have for breakfast? Oh, he said, I only had 17 pancakes. And so the doctor says, well, I think you'll live too much. Because you had to be careful, you know. But then after a while, we stayed there 3 months that time. And then we brought a lot of the men back to the United States because it was right after Thanksgiving and they wanted to get them home for Christmas, the sick ones, to get them near their home. So when we got to the United States, we went to San Francisco, and most of the nurses were detached then because they were just going to keep a few on and then go back and forth between Honolulu and San Francisco for the rest of, for about 2 or 3 months. And they take the High Point men home and they take the dependents out to Honolulu. And this was called magic carpet duty. So we go back and forth, you know, and that was really nice. And then there was going to be just 7 nurses stay on board, and they were going down, and we talked out in the Marshall Islands to do some atomic bomb testing. But I had ordered out, so I got off because they were deploying nurses then, and I could go back to Panama. So I got out and went home for a leave, and then I went back to Panama. And I stayed there for another 3.5 years, but I had a trip I had to take around South America on a Dutch freighter for 3 months. And I had a freighter. You could save up your time in Panama. You could get 2 months leave a year if you got 7 days, you got 30 days leave, 24 days sick leave, and 7 days, if you went beyond the equator, you got 7 days travel leave. So you could take 61 days a year, and you could save up to 4 months. So this one friend of mine, we had this trip we wanted to take around South America, and it was under $1,000. And you could be gone for 3 or 4 months, depending on the cargo. So we had planned this trip for ever since when they'd first gotten there. So I had to go back to take this trip. And we took it, and it was splendid. We went all around. We went through the Straits of Magellan. We stayed in Buenos Aires for 2 months, and we stayed at this hotel that cost us $1.50 a night, American money. We flew down to Bariloche, the ski area. You know, the Argentines, they're not too friendly. They don't like the, and don't ever say you're an American when you get there. They say, we're Americans too. You have to be very careful to say you're a North American, because I read just recently and it said that they were Americans before we were. Yeah, you know, that's a thunder. But I got my trip, and then I got out of there. I left Panama and came home to go under the GI Bill. I went to school. I wanted to get my PSN in nursing. So I went to Immaculate Heart College, and I was there when I got called back in for the Korean War. So I went back. I came into the United States on the 21st of August. I went out the 21st of September, and I was in Japan. I was in Japan on the 30th. And that hospital out there in Yokosuka, it went from a 100-bed dispensary in September to a 5,000-bed hospital in the end of December of, this was 1950. So that was an experience too. And we kept getting moved all the time because they needed our quarters for the patients, you know. So you never knew where you're going to light when you go off duty, you know. And this one girl, she worked in the operating room, so we moved her because most of us work at afternoon shift. She said, you didn't put me in the living room, did you? Oh, we said, yes, Chris. We said, we did. We thought you liked the living room because you were there last time. So we put her in the living room. living room. But then they built us a nice quarters, and we had really nice rooms. But then I got a, well, I never did get my same orders, too, either. I was going to tell you about that. But before I went to Japan during the Korean War, 12 nurses had gotten killed in Kwajalein. They had a plane crash, and they never did know what caused this crash. Never found out. But we got dispatch orders to take their place. We were up in Oakland waiting to go, but they were just ahead of us. And my mother, she reads it in the paper. You know, my mother, she read every bit of the news. So she calls me on duty crying. What's the matter, mother? Oh, she said, I thought you were on that plane. I said, now, mother, you know I wouldn't go without telling you. She said, but your friend was on it. And I did. I had a good friend that was killed on it, you know. I said, no, mother, I wasn't on it. So then I go off duty, and I'll just have dispatch orders on the board. We have dispatch orders to predict their place. So I called my mother, and I said, oh, mother, I'm going to Japan. She says, you're not flying, are you? I said, now, mother, you know they need us. I got to fly. I said, the accident's happened. You don't need to worry. They had the accident. They've been killed now. We'll be all right. So we got there. I went home for the weekend, and I went to Japan. And that's when we had all those patients. And then I stayed there for about, about 8 months in Japan. And we didn't have any time off because we were so busy. But then we got some more nurses, so we got some time off. So the three of us, it was still the occupation there in 1950. And if you had your uniform on, you could go on the train for nothing. You didn't have to pay anything. And the hotel was only $1 a night, the recreation hotel. So it was reasonable to travel. So three of us decided we'd go to Tokyo in uniform and have a good weekend. Well, we get to Tokyo, and Yokosuka was about 30 miles from, or 30 minutes on the train from Tokyo. So we, well, more or less, one part. So then we got down there, and we asked this lady if we could find a place to stay for the night, for the weekend. She said, oh, she said, no, she said, there's nothing. She said, no, it's very crowded, and she said, where would you like to stay? Oh, we said, the Imperial. And of course, the Imperial was where the admirals and the people with the high polite were. She laughed at us. We said, well, we thought we might as well start high and go down. But she said, well, I'll tell you. She said, my husband's over in there. She was an army lady. And she said, my husband's over in Korea. She said, I'll take you to nurses home with me for the weekend. So she took us all to Washington Heights, but all the trees were fine. She took us everywhere. Took us to the GHQ Club and the Mitsui and all. We had a good time. Then we went back to Yokosuka. But they were really wonderful the way they took care of us. So I stayed there for about 7 months, and I got around to Japan to see as much as I could because I loved seeing everywhere. And then I had a friend that had orders to Subic Bay at the Philippines. Well, she, at her farewell party, she fell some way and broke her arm. So she got her orders delayed, and I got her orders. So I said, man, I wish this was I'd get my own orders. You know, I'm always getting orders for somebody that can't go. But I love the Philippines, and I stayed there a year. So after there, I went to Camp Pendleton in 1952, and I stayed there. And then I went back to school and finished up under the GI Bill. And then after I finished and got my BSN, I went back in the Navy. And I got sent back to Bethesda, and I was there, and oh, I was just having the best time. I wasn't going to school, and I was enjoying everything. And the chief nurse said, Miss Price, wouldn't you like to go back to school? I said, are you out of your mind? I said, I just finished. I said, I'm recovering. Oh, she said, at Catholic University, they had this wonderful instructor, and she's oldest, her last year to teach, and it's in hospital administration. I thought, well, that's not interesting. I'm going to see my hospital administration. So I went to Catholic University while at the same time I was in the Navy, you know, part-time. And I finally graduated, and I did everything when I was working on my master's, and I told myself, I saw other people do it, I said, I'll never do it. I cried over my dissertation, oh, I did everything, but I finally finished. Everybody helped me, I got through, and I graduated. Then they sent me to core school and to be a teacher, and this is during the Vietnam War. So I was there to teach the little corpsmen, and that was funny too because I had never taught before, and I learned as much as I taught because, you know, when you had to show how to demonstrate the bath. Well, you got somebody in the class to come up and you gave them right there in front of them all, gave them a bath, and then they had to show you the next day. They took turns giving the bath, you know, and usually they'd volunteer the person that they wanted to have the bath. So I was a little suspicious of when they said, Jordan, we want Jordan to be the patient. And I thought, I don't know about that. And he'd been in the Marine Corps, and then he switched over to the Navy to be a corpsman. So Jordan's up there. I'm giving him back. Well, he has 20 trillion tattoos. I'm telling you, it was hilarious. It really was. I laughed as much as they did. I knew why he was volunteered. And that's another funny thing when we were given the injections. Usually we put sterile water in the hypos. And we'd take the one, we'd have one of them give us the injection to show that it didn't hurt and everything. So the next day they'd practice on each other. They'd one be this patient, one would be the corpsman. So this one I can't do it. I can't take that. I said, Kilburn, you saw me take that injection. He said, yes, but you're a brave woman. I said, yes, but you're a brave sailor. And then another time, one of them was over in the ward, and he came back and he said, the doctor didn't talk to me. I said, well, the doctor doesn't talk to the nurse lots of times. And I said, we don't think anything of it. The doctor has a lot on his mind. So then this one day he comes over and he tells me, the doctor talked to us. I said, what did the doctor say? Oh, he said, the doctor asked me for a cigarette. I said, well, I was thinking you did better when that doctor didn't talk to you. Well, after I finished in Corps school, I went to Corpus Christi, Texas. Oh, I love Texas. It was really nice. I did. And they were so polite there. And this one girl was from Massachusetts. And she said, I never realized how rude the people in Massachusetts were, the salespeople. Because the Texas people, they thank you for shopping with them. And, oh, they just want you to like their country. They do. So I stayed there. And then I went to El Toro. And that's where I retired from. I stayed there 5 years at El Toro, and I really liked it. Well, first I had orders to Massachusetts, but they were canceled, and I got sent to El Toro, and I was grateful, because I had never lived where it was really cold weather, and I had never lived where I had never driven in snow. So I wasn't looking forward to it, so I was happy to come to El Toro. So when I retired, they asked me, they said, do you want an Army retirement or a Navy retirement? And I'd had half duty with the Marines and half duty with the Navy, but I said, well, I've been in the Navy all this time, I better have a Navy retirement. And they thought that would be nice. So the women thought that would be real nice, because they pipe you over the side, you know, when you finish your retirement. And somebody in my family, I don't recall who it was, they said, oh, they're going to dump you over the side. I said, well, they're going to dump you, but they don't call it that. I said, they're telling you they're going to pipe you over the side. So they all came down to see my retirement, and then I retired from San Clemente. And I have really been, oh, I had to give the speech. I forgot to tell you about my speech. I had to give a little speech when I retired, so they were all lined up there, and I had to review the group troops. So I told them, I said, the Navy, to me, was like the magic carpet. I said, it took me to foreign places, foreign shores, and it took me places that I never thought I would go to. And I told them that I hoped that each one of them would find their magic carpet. And then I retired from the Navy and went to San Clemente.
This speech by Mary Price was given at the September 1st, 1990 meeting of the Orange Women's Overseas Service League, Orange County unit. And this is Vivian Peterson. I am the one who's sending the tape.